Keep It is brought to you by Planned Parenthood. Culture isn't just movies, music, or who got snubbed at the latest award show. It's the values we live by. And right now, those values are under attack. The Trump administration and Congress defunded Planned Parenthood, jeopardizing health care for 1.1 million patients across the country. Iconic behavior if villain era is the vibe you're going for. But Planned Parenthood isn't backing down. They're still fighting to provide non-judgmental care like birth control, cancer screenings, abortion, and more to millions of people. And they can keep doing it because people like you show up. Whatever you give helps Planned Parenthood protect, care, and keep patients covered now and into the future. Show up for patients, show up for rights, show up for the values you actually believe in. Go to plannedparenthood.org/defend and make a gift today. That's www.plannedparenthood.org/defend. And we're back with an all-new episode of Keep It. I'm Louis Fertel, and I know you can't see this if you're listening to the podcast. We're in the big studio. There's just so much writer in here. So I feel like my opinions are really going to fly. And they're going to have to fly because I'm seated directly and diametrically across from Kyle Buchanan, like we're in Alice in Wonderland. I feel like we're in like the Tom Petty, Don't Come Around Here No More video.
Okay, so good. It's not the Tim Burton version of Alice in Wonderland.
No. Helena will be invited eventually.
Oh, but of course. Not her. It's implied.
Kyle Buchanan returning to Keep It, the fabulous New York Times film writer, film opinionator. And we were just discussing, you have seen almost everything that this Oscar season will have to offer already. It's over for you. Christmas already happened.
Just about. There's maybe one or two more movies. But it is an unusual Oscar season. I've heard you kind of talk about this on previous episodes where it feels like, is that all there is? I mean, there's some good ones for sure. But it does kind of feel like, what are we going to have? We got to fill this Best Picture list with 10.
Right.
We got maybe 3 or 4.
Well, it's not only that there are a few that are good. It's one is way out ahead of all the others.
That's true.
One battle after another, which we discussed a few weeks ago. And so it feels extra anticlimactic in that way. Like, how can anybody supersede the momentum that movie has going in terms of star power, in terms of PTA finally having its directorial moment? You know, it's all like lining up for the awards dais exactly right for them.
No, you're exactly right. You know, it's going to have a sort of like Oppenheimer like stranglehold on this season, although it's still sort of exciting. Paul Thomas Anderson, extremely overdue. Kind of curious to see who else from that film can make it in, if Tiana Taylor could maybe even make a run for supporting actress.
And when you say Tiana Taylor, you mean in the TV show All's Fair, correct?
Yeah, absolutely.
I was just on Sunset and there were billboards where like the women of that show, there's multiple billboards where it's like Sarah Paulson and Glenn Close and Tiana Taylor mm-hmm. walking in tandem. And I'm just saying like, so a lot of these people are already the Ryan Murphy crew. Tiana Taylor, for her to be in that now while she's in the movie of the year feels very crazy. I can't think of any awards season timing that's ever worked out like that.
I believe that she was a Halle Berry recast because that was originally supposed to be Halle Berry and she dropped out, which would have made sense as far as the Ryan Murphy ecosystem goes.
Yes.
But Tiana Taylor, yeah, they really got her on the come up.
Speaking of LA culture, there's a new HBO Max show called I Love LA starring, I'm going to say, like, the mascots of the east side of Los Angeles, namely Rachel Sennett, who most people know from Bottoms, but she was in Shiva Baby. She's around, very funny Instagram presence. But this, finally, we have a show about self-absorbed LA people. And I say that sounds like I'm being sarcastic, but I feel like this show almost should have happened 6 years ago already, where you get the sort of navel-gazing Silver Lakers, you know, drinking cold brew and mysteriously have too much money and we don't know why kind of crowd.
Yeah. Also, is it about LA or is it about what New Yorkers think of LA?
It does feel as if it's, shall we say, dripping with contempt.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, Rachel Sennett, an iconic LA viral video maker of 2020 vintage. But she reads New York. In fact, almost everybody does. And the vibe is very New York, you know. So from the casting to the writing, it feels very New Yorkers who just landed on planet LA and they're telling you how it is, which is an interesting tactic to take. I just wish, like, okay, if this is actually an LA show, let it be that and not a stealth what New Yorkers think of LA show.
Mm-hmm. Though I have to say I've been so braced over the past 10 years by, like, the Instagram universe of like self-absorbed, I'm lumping a whole bunch of people together, but like Kate Berlant, people whose whole thing is like, I'm trying to sound like I really care, but I'm really self-absorbed. The fact that we finally get that show, I was braced to know exactly what it is. And I'm actually happy to know exactly what it is. It was funny to me. I think it's really well directed. It looks good. So even if it does have a little bit of contempt for LA, I think it is a loving contempt.
That's what I'm trying to see. Like, maybe it becomes like more of a loving contempt, because we just know, you and I, Lewis, I'm sure, a lot of New York comedians who move to LA with kind of like a bungee cord attached, where they can't quite let themselves like it. And maybe it's just because it's the pilot, but you know, when you have complaints about like, oh, the weather is too perfect, or, oh, you have to drive everywhere. Like, I'm so tired of you have to drive. Like, did nobody else grow up in a suburb?
Yeah.
Like, come on.
Let me just say, if you haven't experienced a giant movie theater parking lot, oh my God. If you didn't learn to parallel park there, you're not a person to me.
Yeah. So it's like, you know, I just often find that New Yorkers are telling on themselves when they talk about LA, because like truly 100% of the time when New Yorkers are like, let me satirize or complain about this attitude, this like fakeness or the shallowness that a Los Angeles person has, they are almost invariably talking about another New Yorker who just moved here. I'm like, this is not a symbol of everything you hate about LA. This is somebody that you lived catty corner to in Williamsburg. You probably shared a matcha.
Now, I want to say, you're like an honorary mayor of the East Side. When I think of people who I've known forever in the Silver Lake, Atwater area, you are one of them. So do you find anything in this show that feels representative that you're happy to see? Or what are you waiting to see?
Look, I have a Pavlovian response to seeing things like, you know, Akbar or the Vista Theater or El Cid. I'm like, yeah, I know those places. I'm a little bit concerned that, like, you know, if this blows up in a certain way, that some of these places might get overrun. Like, I'm bracing myself for an episode to be set during the happy hour at Figaro. It's hard enough to get a table out there, you know? But yeah, I don't know. I guess I just want like a little bit more of that flavor. Like at said happy hour, a couple weeks ago, I was sitting next to a straight man who was very thoroughly explaining the plot of The Hunger Games Catching Fire to his captive girlfriend.
Oh, I'm sorry, going to be physically ill. Go ahead.
And I just kept eavesdropping because how can you not over my, you know, glass of happy hour rosé. And at one point while describing a twist from Catching Fire, he said to her the phrase that I will never forget. He said, Katniss was gooped. And I was like, a straight man is saying this? And this was not a gay man saying this to his best friend. This was a straight man unambiguously saying this to his girlfriend. And I thought to myself, let me look over. I just am so curious. Like, I've been trying not to make eye contact, but I must see this straight man who just said the phrase, Katniss was gooped. And I looked over and I shit you not, it was Phineas. Billie Eilish's brother, Phineas. See, that's why I love LA.
Oh,
that is why I love LA.
He was a two-time Oscar-winning.
Two-time Oscar-winning songwriter.
Straight, gooped man. Oh my God, that is so shocking. Also, yeah. Who knew he was into the Hunger Games that much?
Who knew? But I guess we all were at a certain phase.
I just don't know that I would never need to describe it like plot point by plot point. I don't know what that would get me out of a conversation or into a conversation.
There are a lot of plot points. Now, Lewis, you were right. I am an inveterate East Sider, but you used to live there too. Did it give you a little whiff of what you missed?
Oh, yeah. No. I mean, it's so pleasant to live over there. And you know what's weird is this show is actually more straight culture than you would expect. Mm. Like, there are gay characters, but they do remind me of who I would see walking around, like, Sunset Junction, whatever. So there does feel something lightly anthropological, Joan Didion-esque, if you will, about this.
Yeah, the most sort of LA thing about it, honestly, to me, was Josh Hutcherson's, like, very chill, straight boyfriend who has a neurotic New York coded girlfriend. That is absolutely an East Side couple. Yeah. I know that couple well.
That Phineas story also reminds me, during the Domingo sketches on SNL, do you know what my favorite part of those is?
Do you have one?
At the beginning, when the husband, is it Andrew Dismukes? Is that his name?
Uh-huh.
He's like trying to play along with the bridesmaids or whatever. And he says things like, drag me. You know, like a straight guy, like trying to play along and using lingo always makes me laugh. So yeah. Funny.
Now, you know, watching this, I was thinking to myself sort of exactly what you said earlier, which is, why don't we have more depictions of LA on, like, in movies, on TV? You'd think there would be more, given how many people live in Hollywood. But I feel like, I don't know, there ought to be more. When I even think about favorite LA movies,
I know.
I have to cast my mind back a while to, like, you know, Clueless or Shampoo.
I know. When recently, I think Letterboxd asked a bunch of people what their favorite LA movies were. And, you know, when I watch these interviews, I get annoyed because I know what I would say no matter what the question is. Except when they asked about this LA question, I immediately was like, I guess it would have to be really old, something like Shampoo or like American Gigolo, at least the beginning of American Gigolo, Clueless. But over the past like 15 years, like the definitive LA movie, the first thing that came to mind was 500 Days of Summer.
Oh, really? I just assumed everybody was going to say La La Land.
Oh, yeah. Well, and that is pleasant in a loving homage to LA, but no, not my favorite. The middle part of that movie, when they start having fights about whatever they're fighting about.
Yeah.
Rewrite. Rewrite. Yeah.
I mean, La La Land is definitely, you know, it exudes L.A.
The most L.A. thing about it is that Rosemarie DeWitt is just kind of around. Might see her.
And you might see J.K. Simmons in a restaurant.
Yes, that's right.
But briefly.
By the way, remember when he played Milton Berle in that fucking Saturday Night Live movie? What a wacky performance.
Not you referring to a Nicole Kidman awards vehicle as a Saturday Night Live movie.
No, Saturday Night. He's in the Saturday Night. You thought.
I was confusing it for the one where he
being
played.
Being the Ricardos.
Yes.
He plays William Frawley.
Yeah.
Oscar nominated performance.
Boy, what a chaotic IMDb that you have those two roles on it.
Yeah. No, just the most gnarled, like, get me the fuck off this set type dudes. Whoever lived. Anyway, this episode, we wanted Kyle to be unbridled with his movie opinions. So it'll just be he and I chatting it up. But elsewhere, we'll talk about the movie Begonia, the new Yorgos Lanthimos movie starring Emma Stone. We're a late coming to this movie here at Keep It, but I think it's one of the more interesting provocations of award season. And again, our award seasons are lacking right now. So that would be fun to get into with you. I also feel like you in particular dial into Emma Stone.
I do, absolutely. Are there people who don't? Do you bounce off?
No, I know everybody likes her to an acceptable degree, I find. Uh-huh. But I feel like you could write like the definitive profile, for example.
And perhaps have.
Okay. So we'll get into that. And then we're also going to get into Hollywood streaks, historical streaks, streaks we wish would come to an end in celebration, quotes, of the LA Dodgers, who just won their second World Series in a row. I have to say, I caught the last couple minutes of the game while I was at some pregame over the weekend. And I don't know who else to put this. This sounds cliche. The mask comes out of me. I'm like, I'm fraught, and I feel like my dad, I feel like Vic Morrow in the Bad News Bears on the third baseline being a little bastard.
No, I mean, like, look, I'm a native Southern Californian, and definitely the mask sports fan comes out of me, but so does the contemporary gay adult who's like, if you have Ohtani Yamamoto fan fiction, I'll read it.
Oh, okay. Oh my God, fan fiction. Remember that? Stephanie Meyer, we speak your name. We'll be right back with more Keep It. Keep It is brought to you by Koyuchi. I'm so excited to tell you just how rad Koyuchi is. They're truly in a league of their own when it comes to bedding, bath, and home products, specifically their organic sateen and flannel sheet sets, which are the key to more comfortable, healthier sleep year-round. The actual feel of the sheets is beyond soft. It's calming. I can't explain it. The fabric calms me down. I literally just press myself on the sheets as if I'm waiting to die, except I'm rejuvenated. So it's the opposite. I'm waiting to give up organ control. And what happens is I become even more myself and more alive because I love these sheets so much. I love them so much. I am not lying to you. I love them so much and sleep on them every night. Invest in your health and the best sleep of your life. All Koyuchi sheets are made of natural fibers and certified to be free of toxins and harmful chemicals that could seep into your skin. And they're so soft and gentle on your skin, you can sleep well and safely with Koyuchi. Koyuchi sheets give you effortless style, whether it's the subtle sheen of their sateen or the velvety brushed cotton flannel. Plus, vintage patterns, peaceful botanicals, and calming hues bring the natural world right into your home. And with every wash, these sheets just get softer and softer. No pilling or tearing. These are crafted to last. If you want healthy, handcrafted, luxury bedding that lasts a lifetime, you need Koyuchi. Get 20% off your first order when you visit koyuchi.com/keepit. That's koyuchi.com/keepit to get 20% off. koyuchi.com/keepit.
Hi, I'm Alex Wagner. I do not need to tell you that being an American right now is a wild ride. But as a longtime journalist, I am not interested in the noise or the fear-mongering. I'm interested in the stories at the heart of the headlines. That is why every week on my show, Runaway Country, I'm joined by folks in the middle of the crossfire. From disillusioned MAHA moms to newly fired immigration judges to Epstein victims themselves, to understand what it means to live through this political chaos as an actual human being. And now I'm excited to tell you that Runaway Country is available ad-free to Friends of the Pod subscribers. Friends of the Pod is the subscription that supports the work Crooked does as an independent media company and gives you a ton of great bonus and ad-free content. With the midterms approaching, you are going to need more content to keep you sane. And now you can find Runaway Country right there. Subscribe now at crooked.com/friends.
Bugonia, the fourth collaboration between Emma Stone and Yorgos Lanthimos, is out in theaters nationwide. It's done generally well with critics, but doesn't seem to have as much Oscars buzz as expected. Kyle and I both saw it without having to shave our heads. So, Kyle, what were your initial thoughts after leaving the theater?
First of all, Lewis, I like that you kind of pronounced it like Bugonia. Like, we're still doing the Halloween nickname thing.
That's my Twitter handle in 2016. Yeah. Uh-huh. No, because Bugonia is spelled differently. Bugonia.
Noted.
Yes.
What were my thoughts when I left the theater? They were complicated. I don't know if you're about to rave it or diss it, but I feel like you could do either, and I'd probably not. Great performances. You know, I don't have any quibbles with Emma Stone. I think Jesse Plemons is incredible. Love that he's working with Yorgos Lanthimos, because I think he brings something very human to a world that doesn't always seem that way. And certainly, you know, Lanthimos takes this material and makes it something that feels, that could be very claustrophobic or, I don't know, even stage bound, and makes it feel like a movie. And yet, I don't know, I felt like I was wanting more, that it was a little thinner than I expected. What did you think?
Yeah, well, I am thankful for Jesse Plemons in that this is so obvious because he sometimes has a passing resemblance to him and could play him in a biopic. But the way he plays frustration reminds me a little bit of Philip Seymour Hoffman. Like there's just something generally like palpably human about the characters he plays, even if they sometimes run a little samey to me. It's like every director is inspired by him, so he kind of can play anything or gets to play anything. But he is really good in this movie. I wonder if I would feel a little more positively about this movie if we didn't just get Poor Things from Emma and Yorgos, which was, you know, a step into the bizarre. The look is stark and strange. There are science fiction elements or fantastical elements. And in that movie, you got to be shocked by Emma Stone doing things that weren't just immediately relatable in the Easy A mold or the Crazy Stupid Love mold. So I feel like if I didn't have that movie, I might find this movie a little bit more memorable. But honestly, I come out of it feeling a little mid-tier compared to what they've done before. I would line it up more with Kinds of Kindness than I would with Poor Things or The Favorite.
Which I liked more than this. I like Kinds of Kindness more than this. But this is a very interesting partnership to parse, you know? I think that when Emma Stone first started working with Yorgos, it was exciting because it's like, oh, she's so mainstream. What's she going to do in this world? And you know, you described Jennifer Lawrence on the show last week in your Keep It. You were talking about how Jennifer Lawrence in her press appearances, in her interviews, gives that kind of like populist movie star vibe that often you did not see in her very depressing movies, you know, in her dramatic movies that maybe didn't leverage her comedic star persona enough. The union of Yorgos and Emma, I think, is actually interesting because even though it's elevated, even though it's a tourist, you're still getting funny Emma. You know, you're just getting it in unexpected ways.
Mm-hmm. I do feel like in this movie, though, she doesn't get a ton of opportunity to be funny. And in fact, I think what this movie actually boils down to is, okay, she plays a woman who is like a highfalutin CEO of a company who is kidnapped by an underling at the company. And that guy, in a kind of dark web way, believes she's an alien. And she's sort of negotiating her way out of it. I feel like you mostly kind of get one mode of negotiation from Emma Stone in this movie. So there's just not a lot of levels for her to play, even though there's a twist eventually in the movie where you get to see a little bit more opera buffa from Emma Stone. But ultimately, it kind of stays at one level, even though the movie is this shocking, floral, gross display of color and style.
I agree with you, and I think that's a script problem.
Yeah.
You know, Yorgos Lanthimos did not write this, and I feel like he is always yearning to take things in a somewhat more surreal direction that's maybe kind of appreciated when you get to something that feels a little bit too one note, like this story does. You're exactly right in that, you know, it's essentially a series of confrontations that almost never leave this house that he's kidnapped her to. But it feels like you're kind of getting that same confrontation over and over to the point where the movie is either treading water or delaying some eventual twist or reveal.
Mm-hmm.
And they're both great actors, so they can make meals of what they're given. But I just wish it was a more expansive buffet.
Yeah, right. No, the meal ends up being pretty long because we're stuck in one. You know what I just rewatched recently? This has nothing to do with this movie, but Chasing Amy.
Okay. Why did you rewatch that?
I don't know. It came up on Prime or something. I have no answer to that. But you forget that, like, in rom-coms, most movies really, in order to make a movie an hour and a half long, they'll just make a scene too long. There's a scene where Joey Lauren Adams is crying in an argument for, I'm going to say, 11 minutes.
Mm.
And that's kind of how it feels here. Like, are these scenes too long just so we feel like we have a movie-length story? Because it sort of feels like, and it's based on a Korean movie called Save the Green Planet, but it feels like it's based on a short story.
Yeah, very that. Wow, Chasing Amy. Haven't thought about that in a while. A weirdly important and pivotal movie for me when it came to processing my own sexuality. I remember making
Ben
my...
Ben was cute.
I made my mom watch it.
What?
I was like, you'll understand me better if you watch Chasing Amy? I don't know. I just thought Jason Lee was cute in it, I guess.
Oh, yeah. Well, Kevin Smith is also the rare kind of like very straight guy who I feel like does not bat an eye at anything gay.
No, absolutely not.
When you cast Alanis Morissette as God, you know, you have a spot on my float in the parade.
Yeah, but with Begonia, I mean, you know, there's like a little bit of verve to the idea of, you know, she shaved her head and how far everybody goes in it. But I also kind of wanted them to pull back a little bit. I don't know, just watching Jesse Plemons torture Emma Stone in increasingly elaborate ways wasn't giving me much that I didn't glean from literally the synopsis.
Yeah, right. By the way, I think the best performance in the movie belongs to Aidan Delbus. This is an autistic actor who plays Jesse Plemons' brother, and he ends up acting as sort of his henchman in this kidnapping plot. The character was really surprising to me. I loved what the character knew, didn't know, how he was able to be manipulated, how he knew he was being manipulated. There's just a lot going on with the character. It ends up being the most complicated character in the whole movie, really.
Yeah, and that actor was only, I think, 18 when they shot the movie, which is wild to be holding your own opposite those two veterans, you know?
Yeah, these definitive movie stars of our time.
And that's something that Yorgos Lanthimos likes to do a lot. He likes to take, you know, veteran, experienced actors. We're talking about them like they're 80, but like, you know, they've been
right.
doing it a long time
yeah.
and they know what they're doing. He likes to take people like that, and even if it's just like, you know, a small role or a big one in this case, throw them opposite people who don't do this for a living, whose energies are going to be completely different. And sometimes that produces something that feels sort of unexpected and like pleasingly, you know, friction laden. Sometimes it's Emma Stone acting opposite Gerard Carmichael and it doesn't go as good.
Right.
But, you know, it's an interesting approach.
Also, I have to say, I'm, I guess, proud of Yorgos Lanthimos in that he can make movies about very disparate subject matters. And there really is a through line with his movies. That sense of, obviously, there's a lot of physical style, but there's always the sense that something is curdled. You know, like among the characters, there's like a festering something that they have to explore. And so you know the movie's going to get really gritty in a way that other directors won't get to. And in that way, this movie feels like it's of a piece with The Favorite and Killing of a Sacred Deer and all these movies where it's just, it's a little too fucked up. You know, he's almost like the new Cronenberg in that way, where I would leave a Cronenberg movie and just, my takeaway is, what is wrong with this man? Why do I have to see it, you know?
You know, you were hinting earlier at how prolific this union has been, and they do put out a movie at this point almost every year.
Yeah.
You know, I've sensed some social media discontent even before Begonia came out, or Bugonia, if you prefer it that way, maybe this is a partnership that should end. Are they really getting a lot out of each other anymore? Do you think that they should keep going?
I will say I've yoverdosed on Yorgos a little bit. Yorgodosed. I wanted that pun to work.
Boo.
Yeah, Begonia. No, but at the same time, he's so willing to try new things and so is she that I feel like whatever we get from them is unexpected. So I don't think it needs to stop quite yet.
Yeah, I agree with you. Although, you know, Yorgos has been talking about taking a break, which I think is always like, you know, it's nice to refresh yourself when you're making movies to this degree. On that Jennifer Lawrence tip, though, I kind of would like to see Emma Stone just do a full-blown movie star turn where she kind of just seems like Emma Stone.
Mm-hmm.
I think this is a valuable part of the star persona that we don't have anymore. But, you know, it used to be that you would get people, you know, mega stars like Denzel Washington, Julia Roberts, Angelina Jolie, Sandra Bullock, and you felt like you knew them because of the roles that they were taking. And, you know, we know that Emma Stone can stretch, and she's certainly proven that in these Yorgos movies. But just like Jennifer Lawrence, who wasn't really doing comedies until even something like No Hard Feelings, I kind of want to see Emma Stone be Emma Stone in a movie. And I wouldn't mind if she took a little break from Yorgos to give us that full Emma Stone experience that we get on a talk show or in a red carpet or, you know, doing Hot Ones or what have you in a film.
Well, she's married to an SNL guy. I feel like she will return to big laughs too. I mean, I just think she generally appreciates that. She's one of those people who can't stop talking about old SNL. Like, she's a big Gilda Radner fan and stuff. So I do think we will get that from her. I will say about the arc of her career, she's done being weird in the correct order. I always say, like when you think of, for example, this is just who's coming to mind, the Beatles. They had the very crowd-pleasing, you know, please, please me, I want to hold your hand stuff first. And you only appreciate the Yellow Submarine into Magical Mystery Tour into Sgt. Pepper's because it comes afterwards. Mm-hmm. Like, we know who they are. So now we can watch them be something unfamiliar and we go with them on that journey. They don't start out weird. You know what I mean? So I feel like she's just done her career in the proper order and now she can go back to basics. You know, there are plenty of people who've, even like the start of Madonna's career was just like, here's just a dance, here's dance music. And now I'm going to get controversial. Now I'm going to bring in the burning crosses. You know, it's like you add to your familiarity with unfamiliar things.
Yeah, you know, and you're absolutely right. And she's capable of so much. It's why she's so good on SNL, because you can pretty much throw anything at her and she's satisfyingly good at it. But yeah, I would like to see like a little bit more of that return to, I don't know, dare I say normalcy. Mm-hmm. Not just from Emma Stone, but from a lot of actors. I think that we are always eager to go see an Emma Stone movie because we trust her taste. But I do miss going to see a movie star movie to watch a movie star be a movie star. And she's a movie star being an actress, doing it ably. But just give us some movie star shine.
I know. Well, we just don't value movie stars in the way we used to. I mean, like a movie that always comes up between you and me and between whoever talks to me, The Talented Mr. Ripley. Sure. Just letting people be glamorous and have mystique and be, in that case, Hitchcockian. But like, you really are in awe of what they bring to the screen, even just physically. Like, they look like they're on Currency or something. You know, they're that iconic.
Okay, here's a little exercise for you. If you had to cast Mr. Ripley now, fill those four parts.
Okay, and I can't use Andrew Scott or Dakota Fanning. God, who would I play now? Let's see. Well, you know what? I do have to say I stand Mr. Glenn Powell.
Okay. In what role? Would he be the Jude Law?
Yes.
Okay.
I think he's dupable.
Taking place in Texas now?
Excuse me. It has to be Mr. Jacob Elordi, who I think has that kind of Laurence Olivier, Gregory Peck quality, like of yore, that I would want in that movie. I was reading the reviews of Frankenstein, and I had to say, I felt like Billy Crystal because, baby, that's my giant. Okay?
Jacob Elordi doing Talented Mr. Ripley. I think a Google alert for Luca Guadagnino just went off. He's like, am I making this? Is this one of my 55 projects?
Did I sign off on this in like 2018 or something? So he would have to be involved. It's more the women that concern me in this regard. Because who's bringing... Like, I don't want Sydney Sweeney in it. You know, I need somebody who brings that elevated sense of... Like, maybe still Cate Blanchett. Who knows?
Yeah, but it's hard, right? Because, you know, even now as we're describing these people, whether it's Jacob Elordi or whoever, I think what we're really talking about is how glamorous they look like on a red carpet or these other things. We're not talking about, you know, Matt Damon or Gwyneth Paltrow or Jude Law looking hot and giving movie star in other movies. So it felt like an Avengers-level team-up to get them all doing that in one movie. And I feel like nowadays that's a little bit too diffuse. And I'm not blaming Yorgos. I'm not blaming Emma for it. But it just is the state of things.
Mm-hmm. I almost want actually just a proper actress girl to be involved. Like, I know like Mia Goth isn't this vibe, but I know she would bring something.
I'd be intrigued. Maybe she could be the Cate Blanchett.
Yeah, precisely.
But, you know, I mean, yes, it doesn't all have to be about glamour. And like, I appreciate the big swing of Emma Stone shaving her head on camera. Have you ever shaved your head?
No, I don't. I can't wear hats.
I think it would work.
I don't know. I mean, I envy what Miles Heiser can accomplish on the television series Boots, but I don't believe that's for me.
I was watching Boots this past week and thinking to myself, could I pull that off if I needed to?
Yeah.
Because it definitely gives you, you know, it runs the gamut of maybe this person shouldn't have, and wow, actually that works for him.
I would say the most traumatizing thing about the pandemic for me was seeing people try to have shaved heads, and boy, were they wrong.
Oh, I grew my hair out. I'm like, I might as well be Grizzly Man now.
Yeah, no, the amount of, like, not everybody looks like Sinead under there. You know what I mean?
No, but a woman shaving her head, it can look gorgeous.
Oh,
and
please.
I think Emma Stone does look fantastic.
Oh, she looks amazing. She looks amazing. Now, we've already brought up Yorgos and Emma. Do you have favorite director star collaborations from any time in movie history?
I think one, and it kind of operates in the same way as Yorgos and Emma in a way, is David Lynch and Kyle MacLachlan.
Whom we just had on the show, yes. Yeah. By the way, may Diane Ladd rest, who we just lost this week. If you haven't seen her in Wild at Heart, that is one of the kookiest Oscar-nominated performances all time. You will not believe what she does in this movie. And that they hired her to do it, and she's so good at it. Anyway, go ahead.
But I think what I liked about that union is you're taking somebody who could be seen one way. It's almost impossible not to see Kyle MacLachlan, especially when he was younger, as this just sort of like square-jawed, all-Americana guy who could be perceived in a very bland way. And David Lynch was like, let's use that and subvert it and make it interesting. Like, let's find out what's beneath that and let's throw all sorts of stuff onto him. And I think that's where the most pleasurable unions lie, where it could be somebody who feels very mainstream or just one thing, and you get a director who's willing to fuck with it a little bit.
Yeah. I think my favorite of all time is Mel Brooks and Madeline Kahn. This is a particular case where Madeline Kahn was never really the star of these movies, but what he did was pick a featured moment for her every time. So she had the big Marlena Dietrich moment in Blazing Saddles. She has a number of unbelievable one-liners in Young Frankenstein. She's even the only really good part of History of the World Part One. Just knowing that she would kill it, bring her kind of like upper crusty, but slowly losing my mind, daffiness to each of these parts. And I just find her underrated in general. Have you ever seen Judy Berlin starring Edie
Good
Falco
movie.
From the late 90s? Yes. Uh-huh. She's also in the movie Nixon, which people forget about, playing like a sort of bitchy cousin of the Nixons or something. Yeah. I forgot, related somehow.
Yes. Madeline Kahn, a great comic energy that I actually do believe that, though she came to it very authentically, that Emma Stone could give if called upon.
Oh, and I think she would be thrilled to hear that compliment. That's somebody who definitely knows about Madeline Kahn. Remember when she was trying to get on Jeopardy, Emma Stone?
Emma Stone?
Yeah, she was obsessed with the show. She's like, I don't want to be on Celebrity Jeopardy. I want to be on regular Jeopardy. And lo and behold, it hasn't happened yet.
Is she constantly applying to get onto it?
She says she applies once a year.
Lewis, you know the Jeopardy talent base awfully well. How would they feel about an interloper like Emma Stone coming in?
Well, but first of all, our friend Guy Branum was on recently. I think they, if you can play the game, the thing about Jeopardy is it doesn't matter if you're a star. The star is the gameplay and the dynamics. Mm-hmm. This is what I'm always telling my viewers to camera when they shut off the podcast. They're like, get back to topic. Another combination of actor and director I want to talk about, historical. Alfred Hitchcock and Jimmy Stewart.
Okay. You know, honestly, I think that's in the same vein as what I was describing with Lynch and MacLachlan.
Finding a quality in him that didn't really exist in other movies. He did play a villain in The Man Who Shot Liberty Valance, but, and not that he's a villain in Hitchcock movies, but that he could find even a patina of darkness on this guy who, again, should be on U.S. currency. Just was like immediately, he was Mr. Smith Goes to Washington. And from then on, we believed he was just this legend and this utter mensch at all times. So that he would get lost in these tales of intrigue and sexual seduction or murder. He's the star of my favorite movie, Rear Window. That's a collaboration I'm really thankful for, because they both brought things out of each other that they wouldn't have otherwise.
I recently rewatched Rope with Friends because we're like, we're gay guys, we need to know how to commit crimes.
Yes.
And get away with them.
I love John Dahl in that movie.
Yes. But so Jimmy Stewart comes into that movie and he's giving a very different energy than he typically does, that is like a little threatening, a little dystopic, and a little homoerotic.
Yes.
And he's not going to do that for anybody except Hitchcock.
Precisely.
You know? Who's going to ask him to?
In the original writing of it, whatever it's based on, that character was supposed to be gay.
I think he kind of still reads that way.
Okay, because I would say, if Jimmy Stewart knew about that, I would be shocked. I can't imagine giving the news to Jimmy. Be like, what? I'm a queen?
Well, sometimes you can get away with that, you know? Sometimes just a little bit of context can make even the straightest person seem a little zesty.
I want to say that Farley Granger in that movie, so gorgeous.
So gorgeous.
I don't know that he is half the actor of John Dahl. And the fact that he then got to go on to Strangers on a Train and then we never heard from John Dahl again, I'm a little salty.
Yes, but what Farley Granger does so well is to look handsome and worried. And that's half the battle in a Hitchcock movie.
Excuse me, nobody has gulped more. He's like on camera being like, the body's over there.
Ooh, what a neck to gulp with, though.
Quite, quite. Anyway, so yeah, Begonia, it's sort of like in the C plus B minus range for me.
Yeah, I don't know. It's one of those things where I'm glad I don't have to give a letter grade, because when you're like, I don't know, some I liked, some I didn't, it's just not a totally satisfying meal for me.
Yeah.
I'm still curious to see if they do continue this partnership, what they're going to come up with. But, you know, even as we so often do, when we're forecasting, what are the Oscar chances for this movie? I think what we're also talking about is what's the afterlife for this movie?
Are we discussing the movie?
Or is this going to be a movie 10 years from now where people were like, wasn't there a movie where Emma Stone had to shave her head?
Yes, precisely. Okay, and last question. What's the best Emma Stone performance of all time?
Oh my God. Well, I immediately did leap to SNL.
Oh, okay, know? Yes.
I think she's so good in The Actress. I think she's so good in Wells for Boys.
Oh, yes, very funny.
You can tell how much I am and the people are yearning for a full comic Emma Stone turn that I had to go to those places.
The correct answer was Battle of the Sexes, and not enough people saw
it. Oh, she's so good
so
in that.
So good. And you would never cast her in that. And yet she was amazing.
That's one of those ones where I'm like, yeah, straight people can play gay. Like,
right.
As long as they do it really well.
No, again, when we had that movie Conclave, which starred the three straight people who can always play gay, John Lithgow, Ralph Fiennes, and Stanley Tucci, I was like, and here they are queening out.
Yeah.
I love it.
All actors are a little bit bi-ish anyway, so I'm fine with that. Whenever people complain about, oh, these straight men are playing gay, like Josh O'Connor or whatever, I'm like, you know, look, gay actors should have equitable access to those roles, but I do think that straight men should be allowed to play gay if they're good at it, and if it's hotter.
Right, precisely. I think the thing people are resentful of, I always say this, is that playing gay is often easy. And by the way, like, you can just throw on a gay voice, and I'm sorry, you do sound like a gay guy. if your little brother, like disparagingly puts on a queenie voice, I'm like, oh yeah, I know that guy.
Two good examples of exactly that this year, the cinematic year, Dylan O'Brien and Twinless.
Loved him in that movie.
And Ethan Hawke in Blue Moon.
Oh my God. Which is, by the way, I saw that. And that's a movie finally for old bitter queens.
Yes.
It has been too long.
Yes. Great movies, both of them, and great performances. And I think, you know, like truly, those are straight men who are like, God, it's really fun to be a bitch.
Yes.
And you know what? It is.
Also, Andrew Scott in that movie is phenomenal.
Really wonderful.
Playing Richard Rodgers.
Yes.
So if he won an Oscar for that, that'd be an Oscar for playing an EGOT winner. Just get the stats straight. Get the stats straight. We'll be right back with more Keep It after this. But before that, some quick housekeeping. The holidays are around the corner, and we're excited for gathering, baking, and our favorite tradition, participating in the unhinged discourse about Santa. Just in time, the Crooked Store brought back the fan favorite Santa is a Woman crew neck sweatshirts and long sleeve tees, this time in festive new colors. Grab one to wear to your next holiday party or at your family Christmas, both of which were definitely organized by a woman, because a man has never been thoughtful enough to get every sibling the perfect gift, let alone the whole world. So pick one up now at crooked.com/store. All right, we'll be back with more Keep It. Keep It is brought to you by Tavala. It says here I'm supposed to describe one of my worst cooking experiences, and I have to tell you all of them are the worst, because if I am preparing food for you, you are in danger. Don't accept it. If I'm offering it, something has gone terribly wrong. I'm at my wit's end, and I'm not myself. But Tavala is here to make all cooking that much better. Tavala is a smart meal delivery service, fresh meals, and a smart oven that does the cooking for you. Tavala makes it so easy. You just scan the meal's QR code, pop it in the oven, and it cooks everything perfectly. Steams, bakes, broils automatically, no guesswork needed. My favorite thing about Tavala is I know exactly how this food is going to turn out. There's no guesstimation I have to do on my part. I don't want to improvise. I save my improvising for my work here at Crooked Media. I don't need to improvise when it comes to nutrients in my body. And Tavala's smart oven isn't just for their meals. You can also use the oven to scan store-bought groceries like Eggo waffles, Pillsbury cinnamon rolls, and Amy's frozen meals, to name a few, and it knows how to cook them, too. If you're like most people, Tavala is great because you can eat better without putting in a ton of effort.
There are high protein options, calorie smart options, gluten-free options, comfort food, whatever you're into. So for a limited time, because you're a Keep It listener, you can save up to $300 on the Tavala Smart Oven when you order meals six or more times by heading to tavala.com/keepit and use our code KEEPIT. That's up to $300 off when you head to tavala.com/keepit and use promo code KEEPIT. One last time, that's TOVALA.com. And make sure you use our promo code KEEPIT for up to $300 off the Tavala Smart Oven. Remember, with Tavala, dinner is taken care of.
Hi, I'm Alex Wagner. I do not need to tell you that being an American right now is a wild ride. But as a longtime journalist, I am not interested in the noise or the fear-mongering. I'm interested in the stories at the heart of the headlines. That is why every week on my show, Runaway Country, I'm joined by folks in the middle of the crossfire. From disillusioned MAHA moms to newly fired immigration judges to Epstein victims themselves, to understand what it means to live through this political chaos as an actual human being. And now I'm excited to tell you that Runaway Country is available ad-free to Friends of the Pod subscribers. Friends of the Pod is the subscription that supports the work Crooked does as an independent media company and gives you a ton of great bonus and ad-free content. With the midterms approaching, you are going to need more content to keep you sane. And now you can find Runaway Country right there. Subscribe now at crooked.com/friends.
After 46 seasons of skateboarders hitting their nuts on a variety of hard surfaces, Rob Dyrdek's clip show Ridiculousness has been canceled at MTV. I don't know what other programming they have. One could argue that the show went on too long, which got me and Kyle thinking about what other entertainment institutions need to be stopped, several of which we will now name. Kyle, the floor is yours.
Yes, there are a couple streaks that I would like to see come to an end culturally. And one of them feels very germane. This is award season. I'm tired of all the best actor winners being above 30.
Yes, it's very weird. Yes. I don't know why this is the case. We just associate esteem with people who've been around.
It's a wild thing because, as people might have learned last season, the only guy who's ever won best actor under 30 was Adrian Brody for The Pianist. And no other man has since, which is absurd because so many women under 30 win best actress, they almost had it on lock for a long time.
Yes.
You know, old Academy voters, they love an ingenue, but they want to see a little mileage on their men. And I bring this up this year because I've seen Marty Supreme with Timothy Chalamet.
And likewise, I've also seen it.
Yes. Yeah. And you know, he's pretty great in this. This is a extremely compelling performance that's immediately going to become sort of one of his iconic roles. And I think this is as win competitive as they will ever let a twink be.
Yeah.
And so I'm curious to see, can he actually get some traction? Or are they going to, you know, basically do what they did to Leo and wait till he thickens up?
Well, I feel like this is why Timothy Hutton ran in supporting for Ordinary People. Twink phobia.
How many days since an Ordinary People reference, Lewis?
I need to keep the people awake and alert. When Mary Tyler Moore wears beige and is upset, you should know.
Mm-hmm.
No, but you're right. It's really puzzling to me. And of course, the scale tips the other way for women, where I remember a couple years ago when there was some discussion about Michelle Pfeiffer in the movie French Exit. Huh. If she had won Best Actress for that, she would have been the third oldest winner in the category ever.
Yeah. I remember once I was profiling Jennifer Lawrence and she had, you know, she just looks back on when she won the Oscar for Silver Linings Playbook and she's like, I don't know, did I deserve it? Like, maybe I campaigned too hard. Maybe, like, you know, Emmanuel Riva was going to get it. And I'm like, they were never going to give it to Emmanuel Riva over a talented, beautiful new star under 30.
I want to say that she was giving you that conversation in code. What she actually meant was, why didn't Isabelle Huppert win over Emma Stone for... Emma Stone was in La La Land and she was in Elle. Whereas I feel like, at least it was Silver Linings Playbook, that was like a huge hit. You know, it was a star-making turn for her, even though we did have her in Winter's Bone before that.
She's great in that movie. And I, you know, again, Jennifer Lawrence in her 20s was playing for David O. Russell, characters who kind of squarely needed to be in their 30s, but she was so good at it that you didn't care. Whereas so much of the time these days, we don't have the young male movie stars who can play characters in their 20s. It's wild because Hollywood is ostensibly making so many movies that are aimed at people, men, young men in their 20s, Marvel movies. Even Marvel superheroes don't cast men in their 20s. So it does feel like though Hollywood is geared up to give guys in their 20s so much, they're so reluctant to actually canonize young male stars. And here's a prime opportunity with Timothy. Let's see if they take it.
Well, also, it finally took until he won the SAG Award for A Complete Unknown to give the speech where he said, I'm serious about being the best or whatever. Because I think that's always been the real X factor and mystique about Timothy Chalamet is he was this extremely young, talented person, but also serious. You know, it wasn't about I'm here to pal around, I'm here to feel and look famous or whatever, even though he does date only the daughters of extremely famous people. Look it up. But I think that's what we're lacking. You know, you mentioned Josh O'Connor, but like even he's like not that young, I don't think.
No, he's in his squarely in his 30s.
Right. No. So just
and in a British way, yeah. You know, where he looks at.
Demographically, we don't have other Timothy Chalamet. So,
yeah. So I just feel like, you know, if Oscar voters are reluctant to award him because they're like, well, he hasn't proven himself yet. It's like, hasn't he? He's had plenty of number one movies. He is very serious about this. And they don't ask that of young women. Yes, you know, we have Emma Stone and Jennifer Lawrence who get Oscars somewhat early into their careers and follow through on that promise. Sometimes you get a Brie Larson who becomes like a YouTube streamer. but I think we can safely say Timothy's here to stay.
Yes, definitely. So I really did enjoy him in Marty Supreme.
He's good enough.
I would say it's a movie that's low on themes. Like, it's just like an entertaining romp that goes a million different directions. But I kind of liked all the directions it went in, including bringing back Gwyneth.
That's important to me, too.
Woo! I feel like she needs one more scene for a nomination. I don't think she's going to get in.
You know how I feel about this. I think if they just like the scenes you do have,
yeah,
you can get in. Isabella Rossellini style.
This is a sensitive topic.
When she curtsied and the audience clapped, I'm like, that's all you need, baby.
Oh, my God. I'm still not over it. Still not over it. Okay, a streak I'm looking to end. This is sort of a haphazard streak. But I was just thinking about this. I was like, I wonder if this actually is. I looked it up. Over the past 15 years, with the exception of Justin Timberlake's The 2020 Experience and The Greatest Showman soundtrack, the highest selling album every single year has been either Adele or Taylor Swift. Taylor Swift has not had an album not be the highest selling album of the year since she released Red. So, I mean, like that even includes like Lover, which people consider like her slump. No, that was the biggest selling album of that year. I am not reeling against her being as popular as she is. I'm just, can't we like one other person? Can we literally just elevate somebody to the level of being adored? I don't know what that is. I mean, she's really just, she's gamified fame in a way no other celebrity has. And I'm including Madonna at this point.
Yeah. So what I'm learning from this statistic is that you either have to have, you know, like the Starbucks crowd in a hammerlock as Adele does,
Or Norah Jones, you had them once upon a time.
Or have as many variants as Kang the Conqueror as Taylor Swift does when she puts out album after album. And you also have to have, in many cases, a devoted stan base that's like, we want to make those numbers go up.
Right.
And we'll do it any way we need to.
Also, you're right. The whole vocabulary of we're huge fans of this person, so we want the numbers.
Yeah.
That's still kind of like new to me. Like, you know, you and I are like 90s oriented people where it's just like, we love when the obscure thing happens just for us. You know, like that is completely anathema to the Taylor Swift experience.
Yeah. So in the streaming era, it's pretty difficult to run those numbers up unless you're really intentional about it. So I don't know that we're going to have very much more competition unless somebody just comes out of the gate and is like, this is what I want. And they have the fan base to marshal for it.
Yeah. Also, by the way, when people rail against Taylor Swift for putting out the 25 different versions of this album or whatever, like, it's not even fair to say that this woman is a huge part of the music industry. She's her own music industry. Mm-hmm. I'm not surprised that she invents her own rules for like how many versions of an album that's, you know, sort of getting B grades across the board. Putting out that many versions of it, I'm not mad at it. Like, her fans want it. Like, it's not just fan service. It's just market demand, really.
Okay, so what do you think they want more? They want, like, you know, a rose gold record variant, or they want to see her numbers go up that high?
Well, I think both. And like, if I have to spend another $20 on this acoustic version of a song that I've already heard 25 different ways, so be it.
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah. What other streaks are you concerned about?
Can we please free Nicole Kidman from the tyranny of streaming servitude?
Yes.
You know, there was a very funny thing in the news this past week. Taylor Sheridan, who basically runs Paramount Plus, broke with the studio. He's, you know, he's going to Universal. And the detail that apparently was the straw that broke the camel's back is that Paramount Plus picked up a new Nicole Kidman streaming show and didn't tell him first. And she is on his streaming series, Lioness. You know, he's got all of the Yellowstone and Landman, and there's just umpteen series about it. So she's, I think, second or with or and on Lioness, which stars Zoe Saldana. So funny to me that Taylor Sheridan was butthurt that a Nicole streaming series got sold that he has nothing to do with. Like, baby, this is Nicole Kidman.
Yes. Stoker's Nicole Kidman. She goes a million different directions.
She asking Nicole Kidman to not sell another streaming series is like asking Louis Vertel to not talk about Jane Fonda.
Dang.
Asking Louis Vertel to not talk about Ordinary People is like asking Nicole Kidman to not appear on literally anything, HBO, Hulu, Paramount, and look dazed and concerned.
Right.
You know, like a fish has got to swim.
No, and also, I mean, I said this when she got divorced from Keith Urban. I hope she made herself feel better by literally walking around an airport bookstore and just buying up the rights to everything in sight.
So, I mean, get that bag. But I really did think that Baby Girl reminded her of what she loved about doing indie movies and auteurist things like that. And instead, she's just selling more and more and more of these and, you know, enjoy your gilded handcuffs. But come on, Nicole, like it, while you can make these movies, go make these movies.
I think a part of it is she really opened my mind when she gave that interview talking about how if she takes the project, that means a crew gets to work on it, whatever. So a TV show is a lot of consistent work for a lot of people. And I feel like that's what she's supporting. Like she knows she can sort of quote unquote help the industry by taking long TV shows as opposed to just these indie movies, these small things.
Well, Yorgos Lanthimos has crews too.
Yes, you're right.
And
yes.
You did Killing of a Sacred Deer with him and you were really good in it. So get back in that mode. I don't know.
And I need her just in Oscar season, period. We miss people like her as part of the conversation.
Yes. And I'm not naive to the fact that, you know, that there is more work in television and streaming and that, you know, especially if you are a woman over 40 or 50, you know, they're not going to be beating down your door for a lot of leading roles, but that you can get them on television. Still, it's like concerning for me that you have people like Leslie Manville and Laurie Metcalf becoming Ryan Murphy regulars.
Yes.
And in that way, too, like on Monster, I don't need to see Leslie Manville doing that.
No. Do you remember when Leslie Manville was Amy Winehouse's mom in the movie Amy?
Well, look.
Reader, I screamed.
And that may be proof that like you just got to take it where you can get it.
Yeah.
You know, that not everybody is in a position to quibble or say, I'd rather not do that one. I'm holding out for this one. But Nicole Kidman is.
Yes,
so
right.
Come on, Nicole.
Right. Now I'm thinking about Mrs. Harris Goes to Paris. Sorry, you've lost me.
When isn't that the case?
Now, I have to bring up the definitive entertainment streak, maybe of all time at this point, which is Diane Warren.
Wow. Yes.
Now, if you're familiar with the songwriter Diane Warren, first of all, I am impatient about this. The greatest Diane Warren song of all time is I Get Weak by Belinda Carlisle.
Okay.
We're just going to start there.
But some of her more famous songs include...
Oh, well, How Do I Live by Leanne Rimes.
I Don't Want to Miss a thing.
From Aerosmith. There You'll Be from Pearl Harbor as sung by the ravishing Faith Hill.
And what's the mannequin song that she wrote?
Nothing's Gonna Stop Us Now.
So she wrote a lot of really big hits that often appeared in movies and has been nominated for countless Oscars.
I think she's at 19 now. I'm sorry, I should know that off the top of my head. It's maybe like 17 or something. I'll look it up.
It's a really truly crazy losing streak where she is good enough and also knows enough people to get nominated almost literally every year for Best Original Song. Like you've got to hold a placeholder for her, but never win.
Here's the thing. Not only has she never won, but she gets nominated every year. I believe she has been nominated every year for the Best Original Song Oscar since 2017.
Yeah.
And there's no other streak like that at the Oscars. None. Like a consecutive nomination streak. Like I'm telling you, like John Williams is like, what the fuck?
Now, in some ways, this is very funny to me. You know, I've met Diane numerous times.
She's very amusing to interview.
She's a very fun interview because part of it is she wants it and she's not afraid to tell you. And like some actors are a little bit coy about it, but it's like you're doing the whole pole dance. Diane is like, no, I want it. Here are my odds. I'm reading Gold Derby. I think it's this or that. So I do appreciate that. Her hustle is enormous, immense, never ending. I do think the Academy was like, what if we give her an honorary Oscar? That will slow her role somewhat. It didn't work.
You did not assuage her.
She's like, I want a companion, and I know this was not a competitive Oscar. So, psych, I'll take it, but I'm still going for that competitive Oscar year after year.
Oh, of course. She's been nominated 16 times, by the way. My problem is, we need a year where we simply don't nominate her. I don't even need her to really win based on the past years of content. If you brought up even the movie titles these songs are from, you would think I was making them up.
They used to be really massive stars and like somewhat massive movies. And now the songs she's getting nominated for are appearing in things like Flamin' Hot.
Yes.
And it's
which
like,
you don't need to know that much about Cheetos. I eat the Cheeto, I'm done.
You know, Diane Warren is not contributing an end credit song to Yorgos Lanthimos.
No.
Or Paul Thomas Anderson anymore. And I do think she could set her sights a little bit higher in that regard. They don't have to appear in marginal films. If she got a song into, you know, an actual movie that got nominated for other things, maybe she'd have a fighting chance.
Yes, but I do love her as a personality. I want to establish that. One year when I was working on the Oscars, I passed her backstage and I just said, I love There You'll Be by Faith Hill. And she's like, oh, I'm about to go perform. I was like, oh, are you excited? She goes, I'm scared shitless.
And I do appreciate that. I do appreciate that she's always wearing like kind of attention getting suits.
Yes.
To these shows. Sometimes I'm like, I'd swap suits with Diane Warren.
Yes.
Absolutely.
Well, also, it's just like, you don't know that many songwriters with like big personalities. It's like just sort of rare. You know what I mean? Like a lot of people are like kind of Bernie Taupin types who like retire to the backdrop.
Yeah. I feel like she'd be actually pretty fun to get in a studio with.
Yeah. Right. Okay. So those are some of our streaks we've been thinking about. Please add your own. This is actually a fascinating topic. I could go on and on about things that need to stop. And in fact, we're going to get into that very sentiment when we come back with the Keep It segment. Keep It is brought to you by Soul. Struggling to switch off at night? Soul's out-of-office gummies help you relax, quiet your thoughts, and fall asleep naturally. Just the right balance of CBD and THC to ease you into a restful night. Soul is a wellness brand that believes feeling good should be fun and easy. Soul specializes in delicious hemp-derived THC and CBD products designed to boost your mood and help you unwind. Their best-selling out-of-office gummies were designed to provide a mild, relaxing buzz, boost your mood, and enhance creativity and relaxation with 5 different strengths. You can tailor the dose to fit your vibe, from a gentle 1.5 milligram microdose to their newest 15 milligram gummy for a more elevated experience. And if you like their out-of-office gummies, try the new out-of-office beverage, a refreshing alcohol-free alternative that's perfect for winding down on the couch or socializing with friends. Soul also has a variety of products specifically designed to help you get a better night's rest, including their top-selling Sleepy Gummies, a fan favorite for deep, restorative sleep. Bring on the good vibes and treat yourself to Soul today. Right now, Soul is offering our audience 30% off your entire order. Go to GetSoul.com and use the code KEEPIT. That's GetSoul.com, promo code KEEPIT for 30% off.
Hi, I'm Alex Wagner. I do not need to tell you that being an American right now is a wild ride. But as a longtime journalist, I am not interested in the noise or the fear-mongering. I'm interested in the stories at the heart of the headlines. That is why every week on my show, Runaway Country, I'm joined by folks in the middle of the crossfire. From disillusioned MAHA moms to newly fired immigration judges to Epstein victims themselves, to understand what it means to live through this political chaos as an actual human being. And now I'm excited to tell you that Runaway Country is available ad-free to Friends of the Pod subscribers. Friends of the Pod is the subscription that supports the work Crooked does as an independent media company and gives you a ton of great bonus and ad-free content. With the midterms approaching, you are going to need more content to keep you sane. And now you can find Runaway Country right there. Subscribe now at crooked.com/friends.
And now it's time for the sauciest segment of the episode. It's Keep It. Kyle, what's rankling you?
Okay, I have to issue my Keep It to the Friends AI clip that was all over social media this past week. Did you see it, Lewis?
No. Okay. Nor am I really a Friends stan, although I love Lisa first, then Courtney, then Jen.
That's exactly
how I would
expect
it. And then I guess there's men on the shows too.
Well, do you think you would like Friends more if it was an eldritch horror generated by AI?
You know what? You might be onto something. No, I haven't seen this.
So there was a clip that went viral in all the worst ways this past week because somebody, you know, some tech bro online on X, I guess I have to start calling it that, still resisting, was like, this is going to change sitcoms forever. And it's about a minute long. It's all these clips that are sort of vaguely like Friends, like seen through the lens of David Lynch's Inland Empire. Like, they look sort of like Friends. They sound like Friends. There's the laugh track and all of that. There's like enough copyright avoidance that everybody looks like kind of like a streaky simulation of an actual friend. But nothing they're saying makes a lot of sense. Limbs appear and disappear at will. Like, the friends kind of keep spawning as the clips go on. There's more than six eventually.
Oh.
Like, if it were an actual Friends episode, you could title it The One Where People Emerge From Their Own Backs.
Oh, good Lord. Okay, I've now watched it. I'm sorry to say, I feel enriched. It really does shine a spotlight on how much of Friends is emerging with gusto and standing up quickly from a chair.
Important sitcom techniques to learn.
I didn't realize that was like 90% of the recipe. I'm not saying it's good. It's shocking because it looks like terrible AI and they routinely speak in Simlish, but it is amusing how fast that pizza comes through that doorway.
In a perverse way, it is very funny. We were cracking up. I was cracking up because you were cracking up. It's just like the idea that sitcoms will never be the same. But watching this go viral and watching everybody clown on it kind of codified a lot of what I've been thinking about AI, which is like, it's very scary. Look, I'm not naive. Eventually, this is going to get so good that you could make it look like actual Friends. But, you know, it isn't just that AI was trained on like all old stuff. It's that the only thing that ever goes viral when it comes to AI is AI that looks like the old stuff we know.
Mm.
You know, there's this idea that we're going to use all this shit to make new stuff that is on par with the old stuff. And I don't see people doing this, you know, like that gives me a little bit of faith. I would liken it to this is niche, but I'm a Nintendo fanboy. There was a game, Super Mario Maker, where you could make your own Mario levels. And I remember when they announced that, I thought naively to myself, wow, aren't they kind of putting themselves out of business? Because if the whole world can make Mario levels, then why would you ever buy a new Mario game? And of course, the whole world couldn't make Mario levels that were as good as what actual expert artists did. The only things that ever went viral is like, look how many fire bars there are on this screen. Look how much this isn't like a level that you'd ever expect Nintendo to make. And I'm getting that same impression with AI, even this, like, you know, this Eldritch Horror of a Friend's AI. Like, you know, it's just simulating something that we already have hundreds of actual hours of. Like, don't we want to, wouldn't we prefer to look at that? Look at actual human faces instead of things that look like ersatz copies, but shittier and more unnerving.
Well, you just brought up an old trauma, which is when I was an RA in college, you could rent out movies to people at the front desk. And this girl came up and she was looking through the DVDs. And of course, the DVD booklet we have, come on the 2000s. And I was like, oh, you should see this movie. It's really good. She goes, oh, I only watch things I've already seen. That woman was the future. Because, you know, like familiarity is the only thing she was searching for, which is crazy because in order to be familiar with something, you have to have seen it for the first time at some point. But that loop of I'm just addicted to what I already know feels like the most sinister part of the AI experience. You also just reminded me of, do you remember Mario Paint?
Of course.
What I loved about that was you could compose Mario music on it. Same situation.
Yeah.
It turns out I was not Ennio Morricone. I did not line up the flowers and the mushrooms enough and come up with like some rad beats. You know, I never equaled the music of the game.
Yeah. And you know, I do think I would like to see, you know, the Hollywood guilds and a lot of leaders in this industry come out more strongly against AI. Because, look, we're going to get to the point, maybe even in a couple years, where you can put in a couple of commands and spit out an Avengers movie, you know, but add these characters and this person and Hello Kitty too. And eventually that's just going to fill the marketplace with such slop that things that are made with actual artists, whether they're Avengers movies or not, are going to feel somewhat crowded out and devalued. But boy, looking at this slop, boy, is it sloppy.
Yeah, it's really gross. Yeah. It's just not even amusing. I've seen a lot of fake Price is Right clips with Bob Barker where he's like racist.
Yeah, because ultimately that's what it's going to be. When you can make something that looks photo perfect like Friends, the only things that are really going to go viral from it, or that people are going to pay attention to, is what if it was Friends, but they said the F word in it?
Right.
You know, like that's not anything.
And really. Also, by the way, you can just look at any 90s movie. I'm sure all those actors had to say the F word at some point. I'm not kidding. Look at their filmographies. My keep it this week has something to do with an equally sexy person. And in fact, now an officially sexy person, Jonathan Bailey, is People's Sexiest Man Alive. Now, I just combed the archives. I believe he is the only queer person to have ever won this accolade, to be the number one person of the year.
Certainly openly.
Yes, precisely. Yeah, no, my detective work is not done. And I think this is an amazing choice. I also like it. I think most people have seen Wicked, so they're probably familiar with him, but he's still a name that I think people have to really learn. Like, he's almost a household name. Like, I don't think everybody saw Fellow Travelers, for example. So I'm excited for him to catch on even further. My keep it is to the picture that actually landed on the cover. First of all, he's almost mistakable for like Orlando Bloom here or something. But secondly, the key to Jonathan Bailey's mischievous sexuality is his smile.
Yes.
I feel like that is what is instructive about his sexiness. And we're missing that here. Here, he just looks like, you know, some gay guy I know who lives in your part of town. He looks like he's from Atwater Village or something.
Well, that kind of works for me. Yeah. So if you haven't seen this cover, he is in a stream, I guess. His shirt is somewhat open, so that's good.
Yeah, décolletage for sure.
But he looks cold. And yes. I just don't think that cold gives sexy. I mean, like, look, it's Jonathan Bailey. I'm not mad at it. If you like a wet hunk on the cover of a major magazine, I implore you to Google the Entertainment Weekly cover that Jake Gyllenhaal did for The Day After Tomorrow, where Tony Duran shot it, I think. He is wet and looks fabulous. The People cover shoot for Jonathan Bailey, it's not bad. It's just that it's so close to being like an elevated hot photo shoot. It's giving gay guy Instagram carousel, this photo shoot.
He's holding a dog.
Yeah, where it's kind of like Glenn Powell said no, but we did rent a dog. but you know, it's good. But what I do respect is the choice. It's exactly like you said, Lewis. He still feels on the come up, which is rare for people. I definitely think people is like, okay, yes, he's gay, but women loved him in Bridgerton, which they absolutely did. This is somebody who actually has chemistry with just about everybody you could put him with. I was reading excerpts from the People interview. He's talking about the ideal first date. And I read it and I was like, this is someone who actually goes on dates.
Yeah.
Which I don't always get when people are describing these things.
Also, just he has a real like saucy sense of humor too, in a way that I am not used to hearing historically from gay celebrities. Like, they would be too nervous to make the kind of jokes he makes. So that's really cool. And yet also there's kind of a throwback quality about him. To me, he looks like who's in the pictures with Cary Grant at his bachelor pad. And then he's like smiling in the background deviously, knowingly. And we just never know what's up with that guy. Yeah. But he has that kind of classic movie star look too.
And I love that right as he's becoming like a pretty famous, you know, leading man, romantic matinee idol, he is willing to be openly silver-templed.
Yes.
Not something that we've really experienced since Oscar Isaac, where he's like, I'm going to go gray and it's going to look hot.
And by the way, more power to them. Honey, I get this buzzed every week. You will never see this. Nothing Clooney-ish is coming out of these temples.
Oh, yeah. You got that razor out. You're on your Bugonia tip.
Yeah. Bugonia gets it. Kyle, thank you so much for being here. Tell us what we can look forward to reading from you in the Times this week.
Okay. I believe in a couple days you're going to read an Ariana Grande profile from me to continue that Wicked train of thought. And then a little bit of George Clooney. You might hear me on The Daily soon if you want a little bit more podcasting from me. And then, yeah, but we are in the thick of this award season, so I'm about to just like grab on and hold on for dear life.
It sounds like Ariana is definitely going to get another nomination for this movie.
Yeah, I don't know what I can say except that like I think she's terrific in this, and all of her best material is in the second one. Certainly as a dramatic actress, she does stuff where I'm like, oh, you're bona fide.
Yeah, she did herself proud in the first one. So that's crazy that she stays at that level.
Yes, I think that, you know, with singing popular or being a musical comedy performer, even though she feels like a little bit of a revelation, you might think as, you know, a pop girl who's hosted SNL that those things are in her wheelhouse. But she's got to shoulder dramatic material in the second one. In particular, there's a scene where John Chu, who directed it, kind of breaks the filmic vocabulary of the movie to hold on her in a close-up Les Mis style for a really long time when nothing else in the movie is shot that way. And you can just feel him being on set, watching her do that, and him thinking, I didn't know she was capable of it, and I want everybody else to feel what I felt.
Okay. Well, that makes me psyched for it, because I was on the fence about the first Wicked movie. But I'm looking forward. Thank you to the fabulous Kyle for being here.
Anytime.
We will see you next week with more Keep It. Don't forget to follow Crooked Media on Instagram, Twitter, and TikTok. You can also subscribe to Keep It on YouTube for access to full episodes and other exclusive content. And if you're as opinionated as we are, consider dropping us a review. Keep It is a Crooked Media production. Our producer is Bill McGrath. Our associate producer is Kennedy Hill. And our executive producers are Louis Fertel, Ira Madison III, and Kendra James. Our digital team is Delon Villanueva, Claudia Shang, and Rachel Gajewski. This episode was recorded and mixed by Jarek Centeno. Thank you to David Tolles, Kyle Seglin, and Charlotte Landis for production support every week. Our head of production is Matt DeGroot. Our production staff is proudly unionized with the Writers Guild of America East.
Hi, I'm Alex Wagner. I do not need to tell you that being an American right now is a wild ride. But as a longtime journalist, I am not interested in the noise or the fear-mongering. I'm interested in the stories at the heart of the headlines. That is why every week on my show, Runaway Country, I'm joined by folks in the middle of the crossfire. From disillusioned MAHA moms to newly fired immigration judges to Epstein victims themselves, to understand what it means to live through this political chaos as an actual human being. And now I'm excited to tell you that Runaway Country is available ad-free to Friends of the Pod subscribers. Friends of the Pod is the subscription that supports the work Crooked does as an independent media company and gives you a ton of great bonus and ad-free content. With the midterms approaching, you are going to need more content to keep you sane. And now you can find Runaway Country right there. Subscribe now at crooked.com/friends.